Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and I'm joined as ever from North America by my colleague from Sky Sports coverage, Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, first of all, welcome back to the podcast. Of course, been a long week away from you. I've got proper coffee this week, Jeff. I don't want to rub it in because I know it's
there
early
you
there.
Go. But you know what? I found a Tim Hortons that's open. The drive-thru, at least, is open at 4:15 when I rolled through there. So I'm finishing off a large dark roast, and it is outstanding. Really? I won't say it's like the coffee in at my favorite Starbucks in London, but right. It is outstanding.
It's close. Well, Chris, our engineer who makes us sound good every week, I think took pity on me last week. So it came in today. There's a beautiful silver jug full of coffee. I think it's that, you know, the one where you push the stick down and what's a cafetiere. I can't even spell it, but I can drink it. And it's got proper coffee beans in it and everything. It's fantastic.
Now, you know what? I would able to expect nothing less than hand-pressed for you, my man, because you are top shelf all the way.
So Chris has helped us out. We're all right. We're caffeinated and ready to go. And we're going to look back at week six. Fantastic week of games in the NFL. We're going to take your questions in the mailbag. We'll look ahead to week seven, make our selections. Jeff had a very good week. Last week went 12-3. I went 11-4. So good week for us on our picks. Jeff, I just want to start, though, because there's no necessarily a script, as you know, on this podcast. We just wing it and go all over the place. I noticed on Twitter yesterday, you said it was Thanksgiving Day in Canada. So it got me thinking about coaches, because the season goes through Thanksgiving Day in America. It runs through Christmas Day as well and all the Christmas holidays. So what happens? Do you get a full day off when it's a national holiday like that? What happens? That's a ridiculous question, obviously. You wish, right?
You know what? My next full day off during the season will be my first full day off during the season.
Okay, right.
It's been that. You know, it's just the grind that you're in, because we don't live by the calendar that other human beings live by. We live by our own, which is, you know, is it day one of prep week? Is it day two of prep week? Is it day three? Is it the day before the day before? Is it day, you know, is it day before walkthrough, or is it game day? Those are the only days you know on our calendar once, you know, June for us all the way until Thanksgiving. So, you know, as a coach, you just realize that, you know, you're going to live in a different world. It's toughest, Neil, to be honest with you, it's really toughest on families, because And that's why coaches' wives in particular have the toughest job in the world, I think, because they're raising kids and taking kids to soccer and football and, you know, music lessons and all the other things that kids are involved in basically on their own, because their husbands are locked up in the film room for, you know, about 7 months a year.
So if let's take Christmas Day for an example. You know, we'll all be sat there. I'll be sat with my feet up watching the Queen's speech and all of that, you know, having a glass of something and celebrating Christmas. If it is day two of preparation for coaches in the NFL, you know, how do they deal with that? Do they try and get everything done quickly and then say, well, we need to get home to be with our families? Do you have to pick up the players? Our players who've got families, are they a little bit down? I mean, tell us about, there must be a psychological part of it, but then also a practical side of it as well.
Yeah, you know what? What we try and do, and I think this is pretty much the case throughout football, is that you try and accommodate the fact that the players have lives of their own outside of the game. And, you know, you try and arrange your schedule in such a way, or the club does something to provide an opportunity for them to all get together. For example, we played Friday night against Toronto. Saturday's our rundown day. Well, after rundown, the club rented a banquet hall and put on a Thanksgiving dinner on Saturday for all the players and their families and their wives and kids and all that, which was a fantastic thing and a great thing by our owner to do that. But it was, you have to try and fit it around the schedule, because now for them, they were then off and could go spend the rest of the day and the next day, because the players association rules have to have a day off every week. There's no coaches association that says that, you know, the coaches get a day off every week. So as a matter of fact, as soon as the the function was over, as soon as Thanksgiving dinner was over, we came right back to the office and started grinding on the next week's film again. So it's just the nature of the business, and we're blessed to have an opportunity. And I really sincerely mean this when I say this, and I've said this about players too. It's not a right to coach in pro football. It's not a right to play in pro football. It's an absolute honor to have an opportunity to do and a privilege to do what we do. So, you know, there's give and take on both sides. In the off season, when you get that month off, you can get away and you know, just spend as much time as you want doing whatever you want. But during the season, it's the number one focus has got to be the game.
It's funny. Last week I was writing up the part of the Game Day magazine for the Jags and the Cowboys game, the third game coming up at Wembley Stadium, and I was writing a Blake Bortles feature, and I'm sat there listening to the interview I did with him out in Jacksonville, and about four times he used the word privilege when he talked about playing in the NFL. I thought you've got the right approach already for a young man.
Yeah, you know what? That really speaks volumes about that kid, because you know the things that you heard when he was being evaluated were not just about his arm strength and his ability to make throws and his feet and his size and all, but they talked about his character and his commitment to the game and his love for the game. And I think that's a strong quality to have, particularly in your quarterback.
Well, we're going to look at some of the games from week six. I just wanted to pick Jeff's brains on that. I was curious when I saw that on Twitter yesterday. We're not going to go through every game. As we always mention, we try and pick the big games, the big headlines, and then dig into some of the deeper issues of the NFL, things that we don't always get time to talk about on our broadcasts at a weekend. So not every game here, but we're going to look at the big ones. And we have to start, Jeff, with the Dallas Cowboys on the road. They win 30-23 over the Seahawks. We'll get into this game a little bit more, but going up to Seattle, winning that game, you know, first of all, your top line thoughts on the Cowboys.
Well, I think it's the thing that was surprising to me, and you know, again, I said during the year, before the season started, and I actually got a hit on Twitter about this today, that I predicted the Cowboys would struggle, and I don't back off that statement.
I think we all felt that way.
The difference where, these are the differences I see in the Cowboys that I had not anticipated. The physicality that they have on the offensive line, the ability to run the football. Now, that's a very good front that they ran the ball against last week in Seattle. And not only that they ran the ball, but how they ran the ball. You know, when they needed to run it, they ran it. And, you know, Murray has 29 rushes for 115 yards. Interesting statistic, Neil. Since the time that Jason Garrett has been there, when they run the ball 30 times a game, their winning percentage is over 80%. And when they don't run the ball, it's way down. So that's the recipe for success. Now, that doesn't mean you can just go out and hand the ball to the tailback. You have to be able to block all the fronts and looks and blitzes and the things that people give you. And that offensive line has really now started to mature. You've gotten guys that have played together for 3 years, some of them. And, you know, Martin has been a huge addition to that offensive line, and they're playing physical, and they're taking some pride in it. And I think that's the biggest difference, plus what Rod Marinelli has done on defense. They're still not an overly talented defensive bunch, but they play hard, and they're physical on defense too, which is, you know, that gives you a chance. If you can run the ball, if you're tough, and you can play a little bit of defense, you're going to have a chance.
That was a real mindset shift from the Cowboys in the offseason, and maybe it's to protect that defense, Jeff, a little bit, but they have traditionally been, I don't know, a 65% pass, 30, well, maybe not quite that heavy, but, you know, 60-40 in terms of pass against the run. They're very much a 50-50 proposition now. So you look at the numbers and the way they're leading the NFL with DeMarco Murray in rushing yards, but it is a mindset that's changed, because those numbers are real, but also they were down 10-0 on the road to Seattle and they still stuck with the run.
Yeah, and again, credit to Jason and his staff for recognizing what they needed to do. And you get up in an environment like Seattle and you get behind, that's the worst thing in the world, because that crowd gets into it and then it's almost like a feeding frenzy for that defense. But they stayed away from the tendency to junk the game plan early and start throwing the ball around the yard into the strength of the Seattle team, which is their secondary.
Jeff, that was the same in St. Louis. Remember, they were down by 21 earlier in the year on the road, and they still stayed with the run. And I mean, that's some discipline from a coaching point of view, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, and again, you got to go back to Jason, in my opinion, because he's had all different kinds of staff changes. You know, he's had the owners put, you know, play calling duties to this guy, then from this guy to this guy, and all the other craziness. And but yet he's managed to maintain an even keel, a level head through the entire process. And they've started to come out with an identity of who they really are. In the past, the focus had been so much on Romo and Witten and Dez, and the running game was just kind of an afterthought. But now, they're feeding the ball. I mean, you got to – DeMarco Murray, now, you talk about – he's only the second running back in NFL history with six straight 100-yard games to start a season. Only the second in the history of the
National Football
League. Yeah, the
other guy was pretty good, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That Jim now, Brown fella.
Yeah, but the thing that's going to be interesting now as you watch this go forward, right, is the, one of the knocks on Murray has always been he's injury prone.
Yeah.
Can he hold up to this kind of pounding? Because you're taking a pounding when you're carrying the ball 29 times you know, a game.
Well, he's on historic levels, Jeff, of use, and production.
And what now, how are other teams going to respond when they start, you know, playing Dallas? But having Dez is a huge advantage because if you're going to drop eight men in the box, now what you're going to do is you're singling a receiver like him outside. And, you know, that's the recipe for big plays. So, you know, if you're a Cowboy fan and, you know you got your boys coming to Dallas, coming to London, you got to be really excited about the fact that they're playing extremely, extremely good football right now.
Jeff, what's that phrase you always use? You say the Seahawks are selling woof tickets?
Yeah, you know what?
And they didn't back down, did they?
Well, you know what? Let's talk about that because here's the reality. And everybody, as fans of the game, and we are all fans of the game, you know, you're so quick to anoint a team as the next dynasty. The fact of the matter is, when you can talk to whatever GM or head coach you want to talk to, the toughest season that you'll ever play is the one after a Super Bowl win because of all the focus that goes on so many players and so many things, and everybody wants their, you know, to take a bow, and everybody wants to, you know, be the guy that's responsible for, you know, the championship, and everybody wants the next commercial, the next endorsement. So the focus is very easily shifted from the task at hand and the team to, hey, what's in it for me, or who's telling me how good I am, or all the other things that as humans we can fall prey to. And, you know, I think you may be seeing a little of that with the Seahawks. What surprised me about the Seahawks is that both San Diego and Dallas approached it as if they were not going to back off. They went into the, you know, the neighborhood bully street corner, and they said, come on, let's go.
Well, just on that, Jeff, just on that, because I think that was, I was asked this question on Sky on Sunday night. Was this the formula for beating the Seahawks? And it, in a way it was. I mean, if you look at the formula, it was both San Diego and Dallas. They converted on third down, so they kept drives alive. They ran the football well, and they controlled the clock for huge chunks of time. But I thought about it afterwards. Actually, that's just a recipe to win any game in the NFL. I think what was the difference was there were a couple of times where Seattle got in Dallas's face and they didn't back down. And I remember Philip Rivers had that where they shoved him out of bounds and he came up and he was laughing and jawing. So it was a recipe for success. The running the football, the third downs, the control the clock. But that's surely the recipe to win any NFL game.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously that's been historic that tell me about NFL football, they're going to say, well, to win, you got to run the ball, you got to play defense and, you know, not turn it over. But I think the common thread when you look at those two wins is the fact that they ran the ball. Now, Seattle did it by committee. I mean, excuse me.
San Diego
did it by committee. You know, Dallas did it by featuring one guy. But they ran the football. And, you know, the thing, again, that Dallas was able to overcome a block punt. Now, a block punt in the NFL, there's a saying amongst all coaches, you know, in the National Football League level, is you get a punt blocked, you're going to lose the game.
Jeff, they gave him 17 points. They gave him the block punt.
Statistics to back it up.
They gave him the block punt, the muffed punt, and the fumbled snap between Romo. So they gave Seattle 17 points. This might not have been as close as it was.
Yeah, and in Seattle is the thing that is you know, the thing that you look at and you go, wow. Mm. Because for San Diego to win in San Diego, well, you know, that's you expect to play well at home. But to go into an environment that is amongst the NFL's toughest and play as well as the Cowboys did, I give the Cowboys huge props, and I think that their staff and their players and everybody in the Cowboy organization, you know, deserves credit for that. And now, again, how well are they going to deal with that success? That's going to be another test of the Cowboys. Now they're off to 5-1 start. They're not going to be a surprise anymore. Everybody's going to start to prepare harder for them. People are going to look at them and say, hey, they're a legit team. And now how are they able to carry this 5-1 start forward as we get into the meat of the season?
It's great footage. People should go to NFL.com and NFLUK.com, the inside the Cowboys locker room after the game. And it's fascinating and fantastic at the same time. You see just what it means to the players and coaches. And then Jason Garrett says, you can wear your sweatsuits on the plane on the way home. And he gets a big hug and gets lifted up by Dez Bryant. I mean, these are, like you just said, the hours, Jeff. You just talked about what you do up in Canada at the moment. These guys put in a huge amount of work. And it, people sometimes go, oh, it's a short season. It's only 16 weeks. But it's not, is it? I mean, there's so many hours go into each of these games. These games are huge events and huge emotional roller coasters for players, coaches, everyone involved.
Yeah, I mean, you just think about it. If typically we're having 14-hour days right now. Mm. And, you pack five 14-hour days and another 12-hour day before you play a game. That's a lot of hours you've invested in that 4 hours on, you know, Sunday afternoon or Saturday night or Monday night or whenever you play. And then you recognize that the outcome, good or bad, is going to linger through the next, you know, stretch of time, you know, the next work week. So, for example, we lost a heartbreaker in Toronto. We lost by a point in the last minute and 23 last week. Well, the toughest thing is now you gotta live with that all week long. The only thing that gets that off of you is to go out and play again. Well, this isn't soccer. We don't play every 3 days or baseball every day or basketball every other day. We have to wait a week before we can cleanse ourselves by going out and competing again. And that's, again, one of the things that makes football unique.
The Miami Dolphins have to wait a week before they can cleanse themselves. Let's talk about this game. Green Bay Packers 27, the Miami Dolphins 24. Incredible. First, let me start there. An incredible last drive by Aaron Rodgers. One of the best under pressure throws you will ever see on 4th and 10 to Jordy Nelson for an 18-yard gain with Cameron Wake hanging all over him. So that's the good part. I mean, incredible effort from Aaron Rodgers. He was under pressure most of the night. You saw why he is one of the all-time greats, in my opinion. He throws the winning touchdown pass 4 seconds left, 3 seconds left, sorry, and it's a 4-yarder to Andrew Qualls. But Jeff, I do want to talk about some of the coaching decisions from the other side of things for the Miami Dolphins, because Joe Philbin is taking a beating in Miami right now. So this is good, because I can present my view as what I see from A, a fan, and B, a reporter, and you can tell me how it really is as a coach who's been in the business for more than 30 years. So a couple of things. Miami played to win. You always hear this coaches say they play to win, or you play not to lose the game. You never really want to play not to lose the game. You want to play to win. So, you know, in some ways, Philbin did that. On 4th and goal in the first half, he went for it. They got stuffed and didn't get any points. Fine, at least he went for it. There was 3:05 left in the game. Miami had the ball. They're leading 24-20. And he throws on 2nd down. It falls incomplete. Okay, you could still say he's trying to win the game. On 3rd down, 3rd and 9... he said afterwards that he got a little bit queasy and then he decided to run the ball on 3rd and 9. So they ran for about a yard and they punted and gave it back to Aaron Rodgers. So we'll get on to the rest of the drive in a moment. But do you have a problem with somebody playing to win or playing not to lose? Or is the biggest problem if you're doing a bit of both?
Well, I think this is really an interesting thing that's going on down there, because you know, you saw I'm sure you saw that Philip Wheeler's comment,
50% bad coverage and 50% bad call is his quote.
Yeah, so again, that's there's a lot of things being said in the media that are harmful for that football team, and you know, then you have Philbin saying he got queasy, forced the coordinator to run the ball on third down. You know, it sounds like there was panic at the most critical time during that game. Panic defensively, panic offensively, and again, part of getting over the hump, which is what Miami's trying to do right now. Same thing Buffalo's trying to do. Some of these other teams in the league they're trying to get over the hump. Is that at the most critical moments, that's when you need to be the most focused and the most, at ease under pressure. Mm. You look at Rodgers and you watch his body language and you watch his demeanor, and it doesn't matter whether it's a fourth down pass or a pass with 3 seconds left to go. He has that unbelievable ability to stay laser sharp focused and relaxed in pressure situations. And that's, again, a defining feature of great coaching. I understand why he's being, you know, barbecued in the press down there. And then to come out and then actually, on one hand, I respect
the honesty,
his honesty, but on the other hand, I'm going,
why did
Joe,
you
shut up and don't, you know, deflect right now. Yeah. You don't need to open your soul to the media because the only thing can happen. It's all that old Woody Hayes thing about throwing the pass, right?
Yep.
Three things that can happen, and two of them are bad.
Yeah.
Well, when you're like this with the media, there's two things that can happen. Number one, you open yourself up for even more criticism and more second guessing, and your team, right, who needs to know that you got their back in pressure moments, and that you're at your best in the highest pressure, are going to start to doubt your ability to coach in those crucial times. And so I just think that this is a really, really tough situation because they're so close to being over the hump. And now, again, this would have been a game had they stopped them or had they got two more first downs on offense that might have catapulted because the Dolphins are a pretty good football team. You saw it.
Yeah.
You saw it in the game. Mm-hmm. This would have been one of those, you know, catapult games to get them to the next level because, you know, New England's showing their chinks in their armor, and that race is wide open, you know, in the AFC East. So, you know, gosh darn it, if you're a Dolphin fan, you just got to be just bitter about this one.
I was surprised he made those comments and admitted, you know, the stuff that he admitted afterwards, because I've seen him with the media in Miami. I've seen him do his press conferences in London. He's not very open with the media. I mean, he wouldn't name Ryan Tannehill as his starter. You know, he kind of flip-flops between I'm going to be open and honest or I'm not going to tell you anything. And I think it is just one game, but it's a microcosm of, you know, a bigger problem. I mean, it was a fine line between winning and losing. When Aaron Rodgers fumbled on third down on that last drive, TJ Lang saves the day for the Green Bay Packers, diving on the football just before Brent Grimes. So you see the fine lines that are there, but there is some growing sentiment that Joe Philbin is not up to the job, and it's coming from within that organization. That's the worrying thing. Let's look at this quote I've got here. So on 4th and 10, the play I mentioned where Rodgers throws an absolute strike to Jordy Nelson for 18 yards. The Packers had failed on the previous three plays. They're running out of time and they've got no timeouts left. Philbin calls a timeout, and apparently it was pre-decided by the coaches in Miami before. It wasn't to catch a breath. It was to check the formation of the Green Bay Packers. Well, if you go back and watch that drive, they're in three wide receivers and one tight end the whole way. So they didn't change anything. So he kind of gave Rodgers time to regroup after three failed plays. He certainly saved 5 or 10 seconds. And if you think about it, the game was won with 3 seconds left. But this is the biggest worry for me, Jeff. Armando Salgaro of the Miami Herald reports that a Dolphins source said that decision is beyond comprehension. You could see the relief on Rodgers' face when they called the timeout. So, again, Philip Wheeler has called out his coach. A Dolphins source has done the worst thing and not put his name to it, of course. But, you know, you can discuss, maybe you can tell us what the thinking might have been in calling that timeout. But, again, there's a growing sentiment here that they don't trust Joe Philbin to lead them.
Well, You know what? The thing I don't, as a coach, the thing I don't understand is the decision to take a timeout to stop the clock, predetermined to see what the what the formation was. You know what the personnel group is that comes on the field, right? I mean, that's part of game management,
yeah.
Right? There's at least one, maybe two guys in the booth who are responsible for knowing what the personnel group is. Is it two backs, one tight end, two wide receivers? Is it a tight end and three wide receivers? Is it four wide receivers, no tight end? Because you structure your defense differently and you have substitution packages for all of those different looks. And again, this is the National Football League. There's not that many formations and motions that you can get into. And like you say, the Packers were really primarily one tight end, three receivers through that whole drive, which is that's their typical formation in those situations.
Yeah.
So to stop the clock, unless there was some sort of confusion with a substitution issue or whatever, and they wanted to settle down and get it ironed out. But I really don't understand that aspect of it, and that explanation of it leaves me even with more questions. Now you got to understand too that when media guys like you and I and this whatever his name, Salgado or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean we have the ability to chop all of this up.
After the event, yeah.
And we're not standing on that sideline with all that pressure and knowing that this could be the game that defines your season and a win against the Packers and yada 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 and all that other stuff. So again, I understand you almost have to have stood in that light to know how intense that pressure is and how fast everything moves. But again, your job as a coach, and this is not to excuse what happened.
Deal with that, right?
Philbin, is your job is to deal with it, and your job is to rehearse those situations so many times that when you get into that situation, it's almost as if you're on automatic pilot. And again, I think you're seeing around the league some examples of young coaches, and I think it happened to Doug Marrone in Buffalo this weekend, where they get into those pressure-type situations, and because they haven't been through it a number of times, you see little cracks in their way they manage games. Belichick has been in every situation that you could possibly be in over his time as a head coach, 20-some years as a head coach in the NFL. There's no substitution for experience being in those scenarios. So, guys like Andy Reid and Belichick and guys that have, Pete Carroll, guys that have been through it over and over and over and over, Foxy, all those guys, they have a distinct advantage over guys that are doing it for the first time, which is what Joe's doing and Doug Marrone's doing, and so there's some other guys that way. And there's a learning curve.
Yeah,
but it's an unforgiving learning curve in the National Football League.
Do you think coaches slip into doing things because that's the way they always do it? So like, the icing the kicker thing, they do that, they call a timeout because that's what we always do. And here it's fourth and 10, we've got one play to win the game, so we'll call a timeout because that's what we always do, rather than following your gut. Is there a danger that can happen at times?
You know what, I sat one evening and had a great conversation about this very topic with Jerry Glanville, who had been the head coach in Houston and Atlanta, and June Jones, who had been the head coach in Atlanta and San Diego. And we talked about this and about when you kick a field goal and when you use a timeout and all of these scenarios. And what they said was a number of coaches in the NFL will go by the book, because if you go by the book and it doesn't work out, you face less criticism than if you make a bold decision and it doesn't work out. And that's, I think, what you're seeing in Miami right now, is that whether it was because he froze at a critical moment or whether he was thinking outside the box or whatever, with that timeout, Philbin, by doing that, has opened himself up to all of this criticism, where had he played it more, quote, by the book, it's harder to criticize a guy. Now, that's again reflective of just how much pressure and scrutiny these guys are under.
Well, that's the danger of having a coach who's on a relatively warm seat or doesn't have the full confidence of the players and the ownership and all of that. Jeff, I'm punching above my weight here because you've been a coach in professional football for more than 30 years. You just name-dropped Jerry Glanville and June Jones. I can tell you I've coached just slightly less than one play in professional football, that big fat zero. But I was screaming at the television set when I saw Philip Wheeler walking out to that cornerback position to cover Andrew Corliss. I was thinking, mismatch, this is where Rodgers is going all day long.
Yeah, and you know what? If you saw it, then you can bet Aaron Rodgers saw it.
What are you suggesting?
No, I'm just saying it. You know, because obviously, you know, you know football and you study football and you know the players extremely well. I mean, extremely well. That's one of the things I think you do better than most media guys I know. But imagine if you're Aaron Rodgers and you've got a book on every corner in the National Football League, every safety in the National Football League, every linebacker in the National Football League, and you know what your guy can do and what their guy can't, and all of a sudden you look out there and you see 3 seconds left and you got one-on-one coverage, that matchup, well, absolutely you're going to that matchup.
Jeff, I think we need to move off the Miami Dolphins and I need to calm down. Do you remember what happened in this studio about 3 months ago when my chair just completely collapsed? It's just happened again. It just happened again.
It's a sign from above, my man. You got to get off the Dolphins.
I almost went under the table again. I can't believe it. Anything else catch your eye from week six before we move on? And
you know what? I watched the game last night, and you know, I tell you what, that San Francisco, everybody was ready to write them off.
Oh, they can't wait.
Dead and, you know, dead and gone. And I'm going to tell you something. They put on a show last night, and their defense. I thought their defense just did an amazing job of pressuring a young quarterback and making it. I mean, you saw Austin Davis' eyes at the end of the game, and he was like, you know, he was like punch drunk. I mean, he had taken a beating, and it was coming from all over the field. I mean, you saw the linebacker. Scooter has 2 sacks. They're bringing safeties. They're rushing four. They're doing, I mean, they're changing coverages. It was a masterful job on defense by them. And then again, you look at the Rams and, you know, golly, giving up a 75-yard touchdown pass with 30 seconds left to go when you got a team backed up, you just wonder, you go, golly. But that's the nature of what they do. They're a little bit more one of those high-risk, high-reward type defenses, and last night there was a lot of risk and not much reward.
Jeff, I was waiting to record this podcast. I was talking to our producer, Nick Pike, and he said, you can tell everyone just wants to write about the 49ers being in disarray, but every time they win, that keeps that Jim Harbaugh story kind of on the back burner. And it is an interesting point, isn't it? Because, you know, it feels like it's a bit of a house of cards. It feels like a 2-game losing streak. And, oh boy, I wonder what would happen in San Francisco then. But, it, you know, that winning cures everything.
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, it takes the focus off of that whole drama for one more week and puts it where it should be, which is on the players and the game, you know. So, I thought there were some phenomenal games over the course of the weekend, you know. I really didn't think New England would come. I thought New England would win that. I didn't think they'd come to Buffalo and have the second half that they had and really just blow the Bills out. And you watch the Indianapolis, and Houston game was a great football game. The Bears went down to Atlanta and did what they had to do. That's a tough, that was a tough draw, you know, so for them to go down there. The Raiders looked better under Sperano in their first game. But how about Cleveland?
What a story they're becoming. Fantastic.
Yeah, they are. And you know what? That speaks to what, you know, there's a saying, and you know, again, I'm not dropping cliches. I'm just telling you, this is the facts. This is the way it works. You have to believe you can win before you win, right? And that's what I'm seeing in Cleveland. You know, Pettine has gone in there and, you know, taken a roster that wasn't good enough. Now, they have some spots where they're good, right? But it's not an overly talented roster. But those guys go out and they believe that they have a formula for success. They're going to be physical. They're going to play defense. Hoyer has played well for them. And, you know, for them to go into, you know, to play Pittsburgh and score 31 and hold Pittsburgh to 10, I think that might be the first time since Roethlisberger's been in Pittsburgh that they've lost to Cleveland.
He was 18-1 going in, so very close. I mean, he was. Yeah. That's only his second loss to them since he's been a starter in Pittsburgh. And what impressed me, Jeff, is, you know, they are finding ways to win. And you're right, Brian Hoyer has been very, very good, which is why we're not talking about Johnny Manziel as much as anyone thought we would. So, but they are finding another way to win. So this week, Hoyer completes just 8 passes, but Ben Tate and Isaiah Crowell combined for 36 carries, 155 yards and 3 touchdowns. So they're believing they can win in different ways. And I go back to Mike Pettine. I think he's... I was driving down from... when I was on the training camp tour in the summer, I was driving down from Jacksonville to Orlando for my flight home. And there was a long interview with Mike Pettine on the radio. Very impressed with what he was doing. He was actually talking about how they did a lot of hitting in training camp. They did a lot more than other teams. They did a lot of goal line drills. He was trying to breed this toughness and mental toughness. And I think this Browns team's got that.
Well, obviously they've got it because, again, you're talking about running the football. This is not against, you know, our ladies of the poor middle school. This is against the Pittsburgh Steelers and Dick LeBeau on the other side. And you talk about a guy that has answers to whatever you give him in terms of formations
or
play.
Yeah, figure it out.
Right. He's going to find an answer. You know, so you're able to go down there and not throw it to beat him. You're able to take it to him in a way that the Steelers like it the least, and that's to run it right at him, to pound it on him, because that is like damages their mystique, if you will. I mean, they are physical. That's what the whole mentality of that defense is about, being physical and winning the line of scrimmage. Mm. Well, they got dominated on the line of scrimmage. And that's one of the things, that's one of the places where Cleveland really is good, in my opinion, is on that offensive line. And so having the ability to take a guy like Ben Tate and pound it in there against Pittsburgh, that's going to pay dividends down the way for them. And again, are they going to be a playoff team? I don't think so. But they are showing definite signs of improvement and growing in an area that you just described. The toughness part of the game and the mental toughness part of the game. Because if you're tough, you always have a chance.
Yeah, it certainly was a fascinating week 6 in the NFL. Carolina and Cincinnati played out a 37-37 tie. I mentioned this on Sky Sports. In the roundup, I think I called it a sister kisser, and I've had a couple of people on Twitter ask what a sister kisser is. It refers to the great Vince Lombardi, the Green Bay Packers coach, who expressed his disdain for ties in the NFL by saying a tie is like kissing your sister.
You know what? It was worse than that for my son, K. Cole, because he's the biggest Carolina Panthers fan in the world. I had to put him on high building alert, take away his shoelaces and his belt after that kick, because he was suicidal. He couldn't take it.
At least he wasn't Mike Nugent afterwards. They play for 4 hours. They play for 4 hours, and then the kicker misses a 36-yarder to win it.
You know what? I heard something interesting that Warren Sapp said the other day. There's 3 people you don't ever mess with on your football team: the head coach, the quarterback, and the kicker.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think for different reasons.
Exactly. Jeff, just finishing up on week 6, and then we'll move on to our picks for week 7. Road teams this week went 9-4-1. I mean, first of all, does that statistic surprise you? And then maybe tell us what it takes to get a road win in the NFL. Is it logistics? Wow. And then what you do in the stadium? I mean, maybe briefly touch on that.
You know, it's interesting because when Coach Vermeil could break it down maybe better than anybody I've ever been around, and he started with the if you were playing a road game, that was already worth 3 points to the opposition.
Right. Yep.
So you were a 3-point underdog just because you were playing on the road. So when you go on the road, you have to overcome an awful lot of things. Here's the reality of professional athletes, I think in all sports, but particularly in football. They're creatures of habit, and they don't like changes in their environment, right? So now you take them, they fly, you know, you got to get on a plane, you got to fly into the city, they're sleeping in a different hotel, they're eating different food. It's changes in their routine. The teams that handle those changes the best are the teams that make it as player-friendly as they possibly can. Mm. Here's how it works, again, in the league. So, for example, on Saturday, you'll have a walkthrough at your facility and then fly to the city where you're going to play. And once you're in, you get to the airport, players check in, go to their rooms, da-da-da. And then they're allowed, typically, to go out to dinner on their own. And they take their per diem and they go out to dinner on their own. Then there's an evening meeting that night. Where
so you get them back.
you get them back, and it's kind of usually it's more of a fun meeting, and you know, the offensive defensive coordinators will go through the game plan and so on and so forth. But you're trying to get a little team bonding going. Then after the meetings, they'll have a late night snack, whether it's ice cream or whatever. I mean, for some of those guys, it's a significant snack. But then they go to bed, and then they're up the next morning. If you're playing at 1, you're going to get up that next morning and maybe have a special teams meeting. Yeah, every once in a while, teams now are going more to having that meeting at night, and so the players have no meetings in the morning. But they get up. The quarterbacks will probably meet with the offensive coordinator early. They'll have a team breakfast 4 hours before the game, and then you get on the bus and bus to the stadium and play the game. And then if you're fortunate to win, regardless, win or lose, you're on a charter home that night. Well, what the NFL has found is the more time zones you cross, the tougher it is to win. So, for example, for San Diego to go to New York, that is a tough, tough trip because you're crossing 4 time zones and it's a 5-hour flight and so on and so forth. And the success rate for teams that do that is much lower than teams that play within their own time zone. But the biggest thing is that you get the players in a routine and you keep it light. You know, it's obviously a business trip, but you keep it light and you allow them an opportunity to get off their feet and get mentally ready for the football game. And that's where I think the teams that do the best, that travel the best, do the best job of managing those issues. Because here's, again, what happens. Now, you can imagine what it's like when you come to London, because these guys are in a foreign country. It's all new. And they keep them, away from the city primarily because they don't want the distractions in their preparation. But you got to also give them the freedom to go out a little bit, because then you don't want to create a negative environment with it either. Well, the same thing happens on the road. You want to give them some free time to go out and see friends, because there's going to be friends and family and fans and people want tickets, and there's a million distractions that you have to take care of before you get on the plane. One of the things that we've always done is make sure that all the ticket requests are handled before you get to the city where you're going to play, because the last thing you want is some player who should be focusing on what he's doing in the third down package running around trying to find tickets for his, second cousin.
Yeah.
Because and you've seen this, Neil, it's a circus when it comes to town,
yeah, absolutely.
Right? And there's everybody wants somebody and everybody wants something, and there's people in the lobby and every distraction you could possibly have. So to be able to eliminate the distractions, you want to keep them in as strict a routine as you possibly can.
Jeff, you mentioned those teams. When they come to London, traditionally they're, about 45 minutes out of the city in some swanky hotel in the countryside. And I'm thinking that if you and I ever get kicked off Sky Sports, we've got a second career here, my friend, because we'll get a couple of minibuses, a couple of those driver's hats, because these players still come into London, trust me. So me and you could make a killing. We could drive them in and out of town all week.
Well, I tell you what, you could be the guy on the microphone that tells them about everything as we go with it.
Yeah.
I'm not driving, though, because you guys drive on the wrong side of the damn road.
So you keep it light at these team meetings the night before the game. That doesn't mean the starting quarterback can go to the cinema, does it, Geno Smith?
Yeah, well, typically what you'll do is there'll be a highlight film. The video guys will make up. You'll watch the opponent, and you'll talk about special situations and, whether it's 2-minute or, whatever it is. You're going to go through all your scenarios. The special teams coach is going to have his time. But then you try and interject some lightness into the moment, whether that's having somebody come in and speak to the team. The video department puts together a highlight so that, players love nothing more than to watch themselves.
Yeah.
But they want to see themselves, with the hip hop music in the background, and they try and get your heart to beat a little bit and have fun before they go to bed.
Good stuff, Jeff. Let's get on to week 7 then. We'll take about 10 minutes to go through our picks, and then we will get a couple of questions in the mailbag just to wrap up on Inside the Huddle. Thursday night football starts with the New York Jets at the New England Patriots. I'm going to go Patriots in this one. I think the Jets are in trouble.
Yeah, I think the Jets are really, really struggling. I watched the game the other day, and I know Marty's getting a lot of scrutiny as the offensive coordinator, but D. Milner's hurt now, and they don't have any corners to play the type of defense that Rex wants to play. And obviously in the Denver game, early on he had a good scheme against them, but they just didn't have the players to execute it over the 60 minutes, so I think New England will win.
Mm. Let's move on to Sunday. Start with the, we'll just go down the list here. Atlanta at Baltimore. You know, Jeff, that Kevin Cadle is the king of the one-liners, right? So I'm reading out a graphic in the studio on Sunday night talking about how the entire Atlanta Falcons team is going to come to the fan rally in Trafalgar Square the day before the game. And Kev, on air, says if that defense shows up, it'll be the first time all season. So I'm, so I'm going with Big
the
Kev.
Big fella.
I'm
what
going with Big
line.
Kev, and I'm going to pick Baltimore.
Well, I tell you what, Baltimore's playing well right now. I didn't, you know, I thought they'd beat Tampa, but I didn't think they'd go into Tampa and pound them the way they pounded them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and again, like you say, the Falcons, after that big game against Tampa, everybody thought they were back. But, you know, those last couple of weeks make you wonder a little bit. So I'm going to go with that same pick.
All right. So move on to the Minnesota Vikings at the Buffalo Bills. It was a down week for Teddy Bridgewater last weekend. 8 sacks, and he was picked off 3 times by the Lions. So who are you going for here, Jeff, Minnesota or Buffalo?
You know what? I think this is really, really a big game. It's in Buffalo. I just think that the Bills have so much that they have to play for. This is a huge game for them because they want to stay on the top of 500 and stay in the hunt in that AFC East. So I think Buffalo will rise to the occasion. And Orton, I think, has helped them, frankly.
Yep, I'm going with Buffalo as well. So we're both going Buffalo Bills on that one. The Miami Dolphins at the Chicago Bears. Tough back-to-back games against NFC North opponents for the Dolphins. So who do you like in this one, Jeff? It's in Chicago as well, Miami at Chicago.
Well, because it's in Chicago, I'm going to give the nod to the Bears. And I think that all of this, you know, all this stuff swirling around the Dolphins is certainly not going to help them. They got to go up north and play up north. You know, it could be, you know, who knows what you're going to get. It's a mixed bag of weather this time of year in Chicago. So, again, I'm going to take the Bears at home.
All right, I'm going to take the Bears as well. New Orleans at Detroit. This is an interesting one. Looks like maybe no Calvin Johnson again this week. And worryingly, Jim Caldwell said he may miss the Atlanta game as well, which is at Wembley. Then take the bye week off and then come back in week 10, suffering with the high ankle sprain. So we'll keep an eye on Megatron. But I look at Detroit, Jeff, and I look at the kind of teams that always give Drew Brees problems on the road. It's a strong four-man rush. You know, and I think that's what the Lions can do here. So I'm actually going to pick Detroit to win this one.
Well, I think this is a game that the Saints have to win.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting 2-3 right now. You go to 2-4, it's going to be tough. So I think that the Saints will rally up in this one. And again, I think because of Megatron being out and they're a little, you know, the Lions are a little nicked. Mm-hmm. The Lions are playing pretty good defense, and they show them credit Caldwell to improve discipline on that football team. But I still say that, and I know this is a little bit with my heart now, mm-hmm. but I'm gonna say the whodats in that one.
It certainly is discipline because, I mean, Stafford wasn't great last week, but he avoided the turnovers, and that helped him out with that strong defense. Moving on to Carolina at Green Bay. We saw for the first time last week the real Cam Newton, the one that we love to see, the healthy one, the one running and passing. Can he do it at Lambeau Field?
I think he can do it, but again, my question with Carolina isn't their offense, it's their defense right now. I think the things that Mike Shula's done with the no huddle and some of that stuff has really started to help Cam, but they're giving up a lot of points, and I think the Packers at home, you know, are going to be too much for the Panthers.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going Green Bay in that one. Let's move on to Cincinnati at Indianapolis. This is our first live game on Sky Sports on Sunday. Sky Sports 2 from 5:30 p.m. Colts have won 4 in a row. Bengals are coming off a loss and then a tie. Bengals are on the road. Both very good football teams, both potential playoff teams. I'm going to go Indianapolis, though, Jeff, just because of that, I think, the home field advantage there.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same, Neil, and I'm going to tell you something. I'm not sold on the Bengals. You know, I think they're a good football team. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're a great football team. I don't think the Colts are a great football team either. But I think being at home in that dome is a plus for the Colts in their home environment, in the noise, indoors. I think Andrew Luck plays extremely well at home. So I'm going to take the Colts.
All right, Cleveland at Jacksonville. I thought that was the one last week for Jacksonville. I thought no starting quarterback for Tennessee. Titans had lost four in a row. They didn't get it done. So I've got to say Cleveland on the road this week.
Yeah, and this is two fine young coaches. You know, Gus is doing as good a job as I think you can do in that environment, you know, with that trying to reload that roster.
I agree.
And Mike, you know, obviously we talked about Mike Pettine earlier in the show. Two real young, good young football coaches, two defensive guys, frankly, so I like it even more. But I'm going to take Cleveland on the road.
Seattle at St. Louis. I think, again, we'll see the same sort of thing we see from Seattle, St. Louis every week, which is they'll be tough, they'll be competitive. But I think the Seahawks bounce back here.
Yeah, the Seahawks need to bounce back. They need to get their swagger back a little bit. And, you know, again, that's not an easy place to play. And Jeff will have those guys ready to play. But I just don't think that they're quite good enough. I think you saw that last night.
Tennessee at Washington. I won't say who do you like because it's tough to like either of these teams at the moment. But who do you think will win?
You know, Washington's showing some signs of life. You know, again, you talk about all the problems Tennessee's having at quarterback and injuries and all those other things. I know the Redskins are 1-5. It's at Washington. And again, I've seen some glimmers, particularly offensively, out of the Redskins. I just, you know, again, they're struggling so much on defense, but the Titans are struggling on offense. So in the battle of two struggling teams, I think the Redskins struggle less.
Yeah, I'm going Washington as well on that one. Kansas City at San Diego. I mean, again, San Diego lose players. They plug other players in, but the one constant is Philip Rivers. Who do you like in this one, Jeff?
I agree with you. As long as I've got Philip Rivers back there, I think I got a chance. And I think McCoy's done a great job. His entire staff, as you say, plug and play guys. And you know, Kansas City is a good football team, but I think the Chargers at home are a better football team.
Yeah, I'm going San Diego as well. The New York Giants at Dallas Cowboys. Giants laid an egg against the Philadelphia Eagles last week on Sunday Night Football. Victor Cruz is gone for the year with the knee injury, and I have to go Dallas here, Jeff, the way they're playing.
I agree. And it's at home. Mm. It's a huge rival game. And, you know, probably the best offensive threat that Manning has is Cruz. Mm. And now he's gone for the year. And they have not, you know, they have not been dynamic offensively with him. So I can't imagine they're going to be good enough without him.
Different coaching job for Jason Garrett this week, because he might want to point out, you know, they're not handing out trophies after last week just yet.
Hey, don't pop the champagne corks yet in Dallas, because there's a lot of football to be played, and you know, you've had a great six, you know, wins, right? And you know, you look at a season, Neil, in the National Football League or in professional football, it's 16 weeks, so you tend to chop it up either into 2 8 game seasons, or you know, even divided into thirds. Well, if you look at it in halves, if you want to get to the midpoint and have a chance to finish strong, this is a big game. And just recognize, though, that it's the first half of the season.
Yeah. Arizona at Oakland. And we did like what we saw from Derek Carr, I think, last week. Four touchdown passes. Arizona, they just grind out results, don't they? I mean, I still think Arizona probably win this one, but they're not always pretty to look at.
No, but, you know, again, they've gone through their share of injury things, too.
Definitely.
And Bruce Arians and his staff have done a phenomenal job. It's amazing, because they're Arizona and they're out in the desert. You don't hear much about them. But that might be one of the better coaching jobs in the last couple of years that's been done in the National Football League, Bruce Arians and his staff. So, again, I agree with you. I think they'll go up to Oakland. Oakland got, obviously, a little bit of a rejuvenation with the change in the coaches. Offensively, they took the wraps off of the car a little bit. And, you know, they're better, but I don't know if they're better, you know, that much better.
All right, moving on to the Sunday night game. Now, Jeff, everyone who listens to this podcast knows that Sky Sports isn't the only place you can watch NFL football. And this is a podcast in association with SkySports.com. But you lucky so-and-sos on Channel 4 this week on Sunday night, because you get San Francisco at Denver. So first of all, it's a great matchup between two genuine Super Bowl contenders. But also, Peyton Manning is on 506 career touchdown passes. The all-time record is 508 by Brett Favre. So we could see some NFL history there as well. I'm probably going to go Denver to win at home, but what a great matchup.
I think it's a fantastic matchup. You know, and the 49ers are on a short week, and that's tough. Mm. And they've got to travel on a short week. So you look at those factors. You know, they've been in St. Louis, have to fly home on Monday night. You don't get it. You don't get back to San Francisco until really, really late. Now you've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You got a short prep week, and you got to be back on the road flying to Denver on Saturday to play a Sunday night game. So that's tough. That is a tough, tough turnaround. And I think playing in the thin air in Denver is going to make it tougher on that 49er defense. Obviously, this will be the best defense, in my opinion, that Manning's faced so far.
Yeah.
And we'll see how they, you know, if they're able to pressure him. If they can get the kind of pressure on him that they got on Austin Davis, they'll have a chance. But again, you're trying to pressure Peyton Manning, not Austin Davis. Peyton Manning sees that stuff so much earlier, and you know he knows when the blitzes are coming. So I think the Broncos will win at home, but it'll be a heck of a football game.
All right, could be a historic one as well. Make sure you check that one out on Channel 4. Hopefully the bosses at Sky weren't listening to that last bit, but let's move on. Last one then, Houston at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh have alternated wins and losses, but they're coming off a big loss. Is it their turn to win?
Well, you know, again, I think the reality of it is it's in Pittsburgh, right? That gives you an edge. That gives you an advantage. But the reality of it is there's some real problems in Pittsburgh. Yeah. And I think you started to see them last year. It's a team that they have to win this football game, in my opinion. This is a must-win game because they got to get their swagger back a little bit. And that's what I see is missing in them. I don't see the physical toughness. I don't see the great defense. I don't see the things that, you know, define the Steelers, you know, through those great years. The Texans are a rising football team. But I'm going to say this. I think that Steelers at home, after being embarrassed last week, if they don't bounce back, then that's a real – this is a gut check game for them, and I think they'll rise to the occasion.
Yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh as well. So I think we are – we have gone exactly the same on every game apart from you've gone for New Orleans and I've gone for Detroit. So we are going to pretty much – succeed or fail together. Jeff, quickly, a couple of questions from the mailbag. We'll just take one, actually, because a lot of people were asking about, we had Paul Mitchell Moore and Martin Bundy were asking about Joe Philbin and his decisions. So we've kind of covered that off. Tom Crockett was asking about what we thought about Dallas, their defense and the coaching job they've done. We've sort of covered that. I just want to name check these guys that sent in their questions. X's and O's one to finish us off, Jeff. Cool. Joseph Kroll says, what are the benefits of using zone defense over man coverage, and is zone largely redundant now?
No, I don't think it's redundant, because one of the advantages that you get in zone is that you have all the eyes on the quarterback, and everybody sees the ball thrown, and the reactions to the ball being thrown or to the draw or the screen are much faster because you have more eyes on the ball. The disadvantages to zone are the fact that it's zone and that there are holes in every zone, and the great quarterbacks and the great receivers know how to find those holes and you know, work in spots and, you know, shut routes down and speed routes up and adjust routes based upon the holes in the zone. I think that there will always be a place for zone coverage. You can't play in this day and age man-to-man 100%. There's too many ways to get picked, to get rubbed, to get matchup problems. So there'll always be a need for zone defense in every defensive coordinator's playbook. However, it's the mix that matters the most. Playing combination coverages where you're playing man on one side and zone on the other, mixing and matching your zones. Are you three deep? Are you two deep? Are you four deep? You know, all of those things are the mixes that you really have to have when you're combating these high tempo, you know, the offenses today. And frankly, with the inability to get your hands on receivers past 5 yards and how they've really clamp down on illegal contact now in the league, it's tougher to play zones because you one of the secrets to playing great zone defense is you never want to allow what we call free access up into the zones. You want to bounce receivers, hit them, knock them off their route, you know, delay them off the line of scrimmage, all those things. Well, it's harder to do that now, which makes playing really good zone coverage even tougher.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. Some X's and O's to end on. Do you know how different we are, how we come at this podcast from different angles? You're about to put the tracksuit on and go out onto the practice field, right?
Yes, I am. And you're about to?
I am about to be taken by Sky Sports to be fitted for a new suit for Wembley.
Hey, hey, hey. Whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, tell them. 42 regular, right?
Yep.
And, you know, where are you going? Hugo Boss?
Yes, sir.
That's my man. You are so. You, hey, you know, somebody once told me that all your taste was in your mouth, and I said, "No, that's not true."
I thought Hugo Boss was a linebacker for somebody. I wasn't sure who he was until they said it. Sounds like a name for. Do you know what it sounds like a name for a fullback?
Hugo Boss.
Hugo Boss up the middle for a yard. That's what we like. All right, good stuff, Jeff.
Hey man, you take care. It's awesome to talk to you.
I'll be so out of my comfort
zone. Hey, we're counting
the
weeks now. We're counting down the weeks, man. It isn't going to be long, and we'll be in the studio together. I hear you're working on the Telestrator now. You better not get too close to that thing.
No, I don't. I'm not allowed to touch it. I just stand next to it. So I touched it once by mistake, and I had a bit of a panic attack. So I'm just going to be there. I'm just going to be there watching you working on it. So it'd be great to have you over. Good stuff, Jeff. I'll speak to you next week, mate.
All right, my friend. See you.
All right, that's Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back next week. Until then, it's bye for now.